two more poems to potentially read, but I'm thinking one more.
One more is fine. We've been doing good.
And I'll give you the choice whether Windy, One Week Out, or Palo Duro Sunrise.
Let's do Palo Duro. It's not as successful as a poem, but it's very, very important material.
Okay. So let me, here you go. From March 2015.
I drove to Texas to look at Palo Duro 2 years ago. Palo Duro Sunrise, 8 a.m., March the 10th, 2015. The red edge of the disk surfaces over the thinly fogged horizon, rising to sphericality. The still red sun accelerates over Texas. At the end of the road, an equestrian trail leads downstream on the Prairie Dog Fork of the Red River towards the battle site, where afterward, Rinald Slidell Mackenzie, first in his class at West Point, 1862, youngest brigadier general in the Civil War, killed nearly all of the horses captured from Quanah Parker and the Comanches. Next day, I feel I am walking directly into the sun, over the fence, out of the park, keeping my eyes down on the trail. Keeping my eyes down on the trail, looking for the horses. The sun is too beautiful to look at. Peeling from the dead branches of cottonwood, bark soft enough to make a baby's bed. Bad Hand Mackenzie, before he committed suicide, was out here doing scut work against the Indians for Ulysses S. Grant and William Tecumseh Sherman. Beyond scorched earth to toasted horses, the horse of my enemy is my enemy. I toast the horses one more time. When you run out of Confederates, Indians, and horses to kill, you have to kill yourself.
I was going to ask you, how does it all end? But you already said that. It's us surrendering to the Chinese and Spanish.
Right.
But it is the fate of all empires to go down. And Morris Berman, you know, figured that we were in the final stage of empire 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now we've got El Caudillo Analfabetico as our illiterate strongman leader. So what happens? You've studied the history enough to know what happens, what is the fate of all empires, and how does it manifest? You know, and you're living in a place where it's going to take at least 20 or 30 years to, it's 20 or 30 years behind what's happening in Seattle or Chicago or Miami or wherever else.
Well, there's an algorithm for how empires disappear, and it's based on the size of the asset base, how intelligently the asset base is managed, and the quality and intelligence of the leadership. Unfortunately for people like me who'd like to see this empire end yesterday, I don't think it's anywhere near the end. And because we're at a point where we accelerate a little bit. I mean, like the Roman Empire, which is the one. I have two competing ideas about how this takes place. Toynbee, who was right about almost everything except Chinese history, thought that the Chinese had gone away. The Chinese operate a system that's like a pulsar. They put together a dynasty. The first half of the Han lasts for a couple hundred years, and they fall apart, and there's the second half of the Han lasts for another couple hundred years. They go into a warring state period, and that preoccupies them for 60 or 70 years, and then the Tang Dynasty shows up, and it lasts for almost 300, and then it falls apart, and then there's a period of chaos and bullshit, and then the Song Dynasty comes on and is for 200 or 300 years. And this one that's going on now, the Mao Dynasty, as I refer to it, is still got 200 years to run. The Chinese are going to be, you know, I wrote a poem the other day, said, Mars belongs to the Chinese. And so does most of the rest of whatever. But so there's the Chinese operates on a pulse. this system is more or less linear.
This is the U.S.
The U.S. system. I mean, the Roman Empire put together in its ultimate form by Augustus. And the Augustinian age lasted for about 100 years. And it came to a halt with Trajan, who was born in Spain. Well, we now think it was Spain, and he was an emperor. And he spent his entire 18 years as emperor out in basically Romania, hassling people. He conquered the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. He was the only emperor to go to where the emirate of Kuwait is. He tried to operate clear out there. He couldn't do it. Spent his whole time out there just fighting one battle after it. Because just like anybody else that you run over, you know, there's a few guys left standing saying, fuck this, you know, and they'll just resist you, you know. They'll sabotage you, they'll hassle you, they'll steal your food.
They'll put bombs on their back and blow themselves
up. Or as Mao would say, the enemy is the source of supply. Let's just take these horses from these Romans while they're asleep or whatever, you know. And Trajan was succeeded in office by Adrian, who understood that empires have limits. He said, over here, anything that goes on beyond the Danube River is out of our fucking control. Skip it. Let them hassle it. That's the line there. They abandoned the Tigris-Euphrates. He said, in the north, the limit of the empire is the Rhine. We're not going to go beyond that. We can't afford, we can't manage it from here. The supply line gets too big, so forth. He built a wall in Scotland, you know, to keep the fucking Scots out of England. He knew where the limits were. And so the Roman Empire stumbled along for a couple hundred years under Hadrian's principles. By the time it fell to a guy named Diocletian, Diocletian divided it into quadrants. He had a sub-emperor for the Iberian Peninsula. Out there, he had an Iberian Peninsula, Gaul, England. He had a sub-emperor for the Italian Peninsula. He had one for the Balkans, and he was in charge of the shit in the east. He was from Constantinople. He was a Turk. We would call him a Turk. Diocletian brought in the fourth. I see, you know, I know your metaphorical Cascadia. What I see Cascadia extended to the south, and I see a tranche of the Diocletianism of the United States Empire being Washington, Oregon, California, and Mexico, you know, just kind of operating independently of Washington, D.C.
We were kind of hoping Canada so we'd have health care.
Well, British Columbia, you know, I mean, they're not going to be exclusive, but you get attorneys as bright as Bob Ferguson and Jerry Brown and the people who run California and Washington. They're not going to do anything that they don't have to do that the federal government seems to want them to do. Reasserting a kind of a there's a slip clause in our system about states' rights, you know, and they're going to assert that till the end power. Then there's a middle tranche of the country, which is like Texas and the Plains and all those conservatives, and there's a slice across the Northeast. You know, Illinois, Minnesota, the
all the way to New York and New England.
Yeah, and New England, and then in the South, of course, is its own kind of fucking problem. You know what people don't? I mean, one of the reasons we have such bad government in this country is 30 Republican senators from 15 states representing 38 million people. There are 30 votes in the Senate, as opposed to the two senators from California representing 39 million people. So
it's unsustainable, is what you're saying.
It's very unsustainable because it's a minority system. I mean, the top part of this system is unsustainable. The bottom part of it is, I mean, the people are trying to operate their own systems. So California and Washington trying to do carbon capping, you know, trying to make, you know, act intelligently and adult. You know, and so on. So, but the problem of getting rid of the empire right away is, who's going to undo it? You know,
there's no Gorbachev.
Well, what the United States is not able to see in their leadership is, if you watch how the United States got to where it was, where it is, The proclamation of 1763 confined the United States to the west side, or the colonies to the west, the east side of the Appalachian drainage, because the French and Indian War, the Americans weren't supposed to go over there. That was British territory. Not supposed to go over there and hassle the Indians. That was 1764, Daniel Boone shows up, goes over to the Congo Gap, takes over the dark and bloody ground, turns it into McConnell's kitchen. In short form. But then the Civil War gives the United States control of all of that. Jefferson buys Louisiana from Napoleon, who never fucking owned it, to say the least. You know, and then Andrew Jackson takes Florida. And then
Spanish-American War.
The compromise, Spanish-American War is a little later. The compromise of 1820 said you can't take slaves north of the southern boundary of Missouri into the new territory. You may not know this, but Illinois once petitioned the United States government to be admitted to the Union as a slave state.
I believe in anything south of 111th Street is the South.
Okay, but the compromise of 1820 kept people from taking slaves in the north part of Louisiana. 1821, 9 months later, Stephen Austin goes to Texas. And there's a Texas War. And then the Mexican-American War, they get everything to California. You know, they compromise with the British about Oregon. And then they're on the coast. They're at a limit to the empire, so to speak. Branching out from that, there's Hawaii out there. President Grover Cleveland said... tried to protect the integrity of the Hawaiian Islands. But President McKinley came in right after him and said, we got to annex Hawaii to protect it from foreign occupation, being foreign themselves. So they made a leap out into the water.
Kicked out the queen.
They had the Spanish-American War. They got the Philippines. They're still trying to treat Somalia and Kuwait and Afghanistan as if it was South Dakota.
Right.
And that won't fucking work,
right,
because you're too far. Like, this is the Trajan part of our problem. It's too far away to maintain.
Right.
And even at their goofy fucking standards of spending $1 trillion a year on their military.
It's going to take a Republican in this system to figure that out, isn't it, for anything to start to happen? Or is it going to be the Attorney General of states like Washington, the Attorneys General, to figure out, we're taking a stand against Trumpism, and this is how it's going to look?
Well, the court says the power in this system is really bifurcated, but the asset base is enormous. Even with clowns running it, this empire will last for a long time.
So one needs to, as Bucky Fuller said, don't fight the current system, but invent something that renders the current system irrelevant. Something to that effect.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe if we did a slight change in the currency and abandoned the dollar and had some other way of dealing with it, and you know, things like Airbnb and Uber are ways that have decimated industries almost instantly. The newspaper industry 20 years ago. I mean, it took 20 years to kill it off. The hotels aren't dead, but Airbnb is a $30 billion business. So the possibility for quick change exists with the right kind of invention that separates us from the current financial system, the dollar, however you want to say it.
Some good do-gooder college student showed up on my door one day when I lived downtown talking to me about... how I felt about things. I said, well, sooner or later, we're going to have to learn how to live here. We'll see the farmer's market where you can see the people from Welcome Table Farms that I support, you know, and all my friends. Only a handful of them were here last night, Carlin and Fogarty. But what are we going to do? I said, what are you going to be doing in the future is raising your own vegetables. You know, you're not going to be dreaming up cosmopolitan solutions to problems 500 miles away.
Bill Mollison said that the future of agriculture is in the suburbs because you can take those big lawns and start growing carrots on them and kale.
Well, that's what I mean. You're going to have to grow your own food. I grow probably 15 or 20% of them. I've got my own grape juice. I get my own carrot.
I think a better way to interview is that other poem that I wanted you to read. Could you read?
What, yeah, what is it? Oh, Wendy? Wendy, 1 week out. It's been a week since Wendy died, her chin whiskers protruding beyond her lips that will never nurse, nose that never breathed fresh air. Her eyes were closed, an air of peace surrounded her before the sand and gravel of her grave. Pinned her down in thrust position, hind legs extended to the max, front legs drawn up as if leaping. Into the hard space of tomorrow, we bring the dead with us until they become too heavy to handle. Inside every living person, especially the elderly, but some youngsters have it too, is a walking mausoleum of the dead. Parents, siblings, friends, relatives, and the famous dead like Kennedy and King. Joining this parade of past tense witnesses, I have a baby horse inside me.